From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. World-renowned artist Robert Rauschenberg is being recognized with a solo exhibition of his work at the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery. The show opens at Florida Southwestern State College later this month. The exhibit will be the first solo exhibition of the late artist's work since his memorial at the gallery in 2008. The show explores Rauschenberg's connection to China and how his work has influenced artistic communities around the world. Plus, we'll hear from another internationally acclaimed artist who calls Southwest Florida home. Modern urban expressionist painter Marcus Jansen has shows coming up in London, Rome, and New York, as well as a lecture next month at Florida Gulf Coast University. We explore the inspiration and the meaning in Jansen's work. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Internationally recognized artist and Fort Myers resident Marcus Jansen has exhibitions coming up in London, New York, and Rome. The modern urban expressionist painter also has a lecture coming up next month at Florida Gulf Coast University. He recently stopped by our studios for a talk with WGCU's Amy Tardiff about his work in his Unit A contemporary art space here in Fort Myers. That conversation later this hour. But first, another world-renowned artist with ties to Southwest Florida is being celebrated with a solo exhibition opening October 22nd. The Bob Rauschenberg Gallery at Florida Southwestern State College is hosting the show titled China-America Mix through the end of January. It marks the first solo exhibition of the late artist's work at the gallery since his memorial in 2008. The show also celebrates the 10-year anniversary of the renaming of the gallery in Rauschenberg's honor, as well as what would have been the artist's 89th birthday. Rauschenberg's early work is said to have pioneered the transition from European modernism to American pop art. His art extended beyond paintings to include graphic design, sculpture, photography, printmaking, papermaking, and performance. He's widely acknowledged as one of the most influential artists of the 20th century, and his influence around the world endures. That's due in great part to the Rauschenberg Overseas Cultural Exchange, or ROCE, which he announced before the United Nations in 1984. Through that initiative, Rauschenberg traveled to countries around the world, including China, Japan, Tibet, Mexico, and Cuba, and the Soviet Union, among others. In each location, Rauschenberg would create art inspired and influenced by the cultures he was visiting. Even before the Overseas Cultural Exchange Initiative, Rauschenberg had already begun visiting China and influencing the art world there. The upcoming solo exhibition focuses particularly on Rauschenberg's work in China. Joining us now for a closer look at the exhibition and at Rauschenberg's legacy is Jay Dillinger. He's Director of Exhibitions and Collections at the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery at Florida Southwestern State College. Dillinger's also worked as an independent curator, collaborating with the Contemporary Art Museum at the University of South Florida and the Tampa Museum of Art. With a particular interest in contemporary art, Dillinger has curated major solo museum exhibitions for artists such as Keith Haring, Lucy Orta, and Anne Hamilton, among others. Prior to taking the helm at the Rauschenberg Gallery, Dillinger had curated shows here at Southwest Florida, State College, and also here at FGCU. Jay Dillinger, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks so much, John. Great to be here.
I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Robert Rauschenberg passed away in 2008. Why did you decide to do a solo exhibition of his work at the gallery now?
Well, John, I've been here, you know, about a year now as of September. So I've been really excited about the possibility of revisiting, working with, doing a project specific to Rauschenberg, given the history at the gallery, which is extraordinary. The gallery was, built as such in 1979. This will be the 16th solo Rauschenberg exhibition on the campus. And it's been 10 years, as you said in the introduction, since we, have had Well, since we renamed the gallery, the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery, in his honor, and he was very much involved in that process. But as it's the 10-year anniversary, I was thinking that, you know, while it was still 2014, it would be a great time to try to do something. And so the fall programming has basically been focused on that. The first show that we did in late August was an exhibition called The Moon Museum, Apollo 12's Secret Art Mission. And that was a Rauschenberg-inspired, Rauschenberg-generated, really, project about sending art to the moon. So we showed a little object that was the first space art object, called the Moon Museum, and Rauschenberg had done a drawing on that. And so that was sort of leading up to this, which, again, opens on October 22nd, his birthday.
Yeah. It is interesting for folks who don't know. There is a Rauschenberg on the moon.
and Andy Warhol, yes, and others. It was a small sort of ceramic chip that had drawings by six artists. But Rauschenberg, really, in that period in the 60s, was profoundly interested in collaborations with scientists and with engineers. And so he had established what was called Experiments in Art and Technology, EAT. And after the first moon landing, the Apollo 11, as they were all celebrating, and in fact, he had been invited by NASA to watch the launch of the Apollo 11. So he had come down to Florida. And it's said, really, that that trip in 1969 is the reason that he ended up moving here in 1970. He had come down first in the 60s, early 60s, stayed in Treasure Island, and actually they talk about him having gone through hell to get to Florida, because when he came the very first time, he was working on a series of drawings related to Dante's Inferno. Mm. And so he fell in love again with, you know, being on the Gulf Coast. He was from Port Arthur, so, you know, growing up in Texas on the Gulf Coast as well, this part of Florida really attracted him. And the first trip out, actually, to Sanibel and Captiva was before there was a bridge. He literally came across the ferry and fell in love with Captiva. So it was 1970 when he really moved there.
All right. And, you know, he enjoyed such a long career and a very prolific artist. So a lot of works to choose from. You know, as the curator, what made you decide to focus in on this connection with China?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, China has developed in recent years into such a powerful, you know, remarkable place, and all the more so in terms of its position in the art world and in the art industry, and, you know, it's really flourished. So they still, to this day, talk about before and after Rauschenberg in China. And over the years, as, you know, I've traveled around doing curatorial projects prior to coming to FSW, I was an independent curator for about 20 years. So as I would go to Havana or Caracas or Moscow or Hong Kong, you know, I'd meet artists, and many of them had experienced or really been hugely impacted by Rauschenberg's visits in the 80s through Rocky. So for me, it was China in some ways was the starting point. It wasn't the first venue. I mean, he did the first Rocky project actually in Mexico City, but had it not been for this trip in 1982 to China, the whole Rocky project probably would not have been launched in that way. He went there with Donald Saaf, who was the director of Graphic Studio, founding director of Graphic Studio, and who became the artistic director for Rocky. Don is going to be giving our kind of keynote lecture the night of the opening, so next Wednesday. And so China, I mean, just it seemed like the appropriate starting point. So, and there's a rather remarkable work that was produced as a result of that first trip to China. Rauschenberg talked about, doing a world tour even in the 1960s. So he traveled with Merce Cunningham and with John Cage and did kind of a world tour with the Merce Cunningham Dance Company, providing sets and, functioning in that capacity. And I think that was in part inspiration for all of this. But, China just seemed a great place to start. There is a work that we've included in the exhibition that hasn't been shown anywhere in the world in the last decade. And as we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary, I thought it would be great to show it. It, at the time, was the largest color photograph ever printed.
Yeah, you've had to rework the actual gallery space to fit it in there, a 100-foot-long photograph.
That's right. It's yeah, a.k.a. the 100-foot photograph. It's called Chinese Summer Hall. And that image is it's comprised really of 52 photographs that the negatives were then sort of collaged, and additions were done of some of the singular photographs. So we have 28 studies for Chinese Summer Hall in the exhibition as well that are going to be arranged in odd ways using chance operation, actually using the I Ching, the Chinese Oracle. But the 100-foot photograph really took sort of reconfiguring the gallery. We had to close off our alcove, build a wall there, round the walls so that it could wrap three of the four walls in the gallery.
And was this piece one of the ones that was exhibited at the National Gallery in Beijing in the 80s?
It was, yeah. And then later, at the end of Rocky, Rauschenberg, it all sort of culminated after these exhibitions in these 11 countries, I think, with a big exhibition at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. So it was also shown there. And they own one of the 100-foot photographs, but I don't believe they've ever lent theirs. This particular one is coming from the University of South Florida Contemporary Art Museum in Tampa, and where it was produced. They were actually produced at Graphic Studio. So...
And that's the really we should say is the Rauschenberg's overseas cultural exchange connection to Florida. It's kind of based in Tampa, right?
It was. I mean, Rocky Rauschenberg Overseas Culture Interchange.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And he had a sort of mascot for it, which was his tortoise that was named Rocky as well. And it was when he went to China that that his Rocky became kind of the mascot, because he had seen, there were sort of ancient forms of turtles that were carrying the world on their back. And so this became kind of the mascot. But following this initial trip to China with Donald Saff, who was the director and founding director of Graphic Studio, there was discussion about setting up a sort of an office through USF's Institute for Research and Art and Graphic Studio to begin to coordinate all of these worldwide, visits, which were quite a complex thing to try to accomplish. He started by announcing the whole thing at the United Nations, and then the first stop was in Mexico City. And he talked about it as a means by which to introduce the world to itself. And he really was saw it as a peace mission. So
there was something of a social message, not a political message per se, but a social message.
Absolutely. And it was the intent was really for it not to be political, although at the same time, of course, he was going to places that were difficult generally for Americans to travel to.
Cuba, China at the time.
Kuala Lumpur, Caracas, Chile. I mean, they were very complex political situations that he was entering in that way.
So given that there was some, I guess cultural or social isolation there. You're talking about these very insular countries. I would imagine that would have make somebody like Rauschenberg coming in and doing this showing his type of work would really kind of be something revolutionary.
It was, and in China in particular. I mean, because he was the first Western contemporary artist to have an exhibition there, to be able to sort of travel relatively freely there. It was reflected in the turnout at these exhibitions. I mean, in the first few days, there were 78,000 people who saw the show in Beijing and 300,000 over the course of the short 3-week run of the show. So, they really do talk about that lasting impact.
Well, let's take a phone call now from Roland in Fort Myers. Roland, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Did you have a comment? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I had a question. I knew Bob informally. I'm a friend of John and Fran Jennings, and he used to come into town quite a bit and entertain. First of all, he's a very charming, wonderful guy to talk to, a lot of fun. I had a question, though, about his less more ephemeral works that he did. Specifically, I'm talking about the happenings that he did in New York in the 60s. And I just wanted to ask your guest what he thought the impact of those temporary kind of events had on American culture and art.
Yeah. Thanks for your call and the question, actually. And it's lovely you bring up John and Fran Fenning. We will actually be borrowing their seven characters, which we've yet to talk about, but they'll be in the exhibition, and also a piece from the Lotus series that has come from their collection. So we're sort of informally dedicating the show a bit to Dr. Fenning, so John Fenning. And that said, I do think, you know, Rauschenberg's influence and impact continues to be felt. Things that were, you know, at the time sort of seen as ephemeral, or, you know, the happenings and all of that, you know, I think historically are greatly significant. And as we move forward at the Rauschenberg Gallery to do projects, you know, there will be shows. The opening exhibition we did was actually, you know, a solo show, worked with Yoko Ono to develop a project in the gallery that included new work and a billboard project and other things. Because of Rauschenberg's interest and commitment, both philanthropically, you know, broadly to social causes and to peace, and of course that's very much tied to the whole mission with Rocky, you know, Yoko Ono was sort of about that. That said, you know, we're now talking about doing some other projects with artists like Phil Korner. And Phil was involved with the Judson Memorial Church and was a participant in some of those early happening kinds of events, and Trisha Brown and others. So, you know, Rauschenberg's influence is massive, and you're absolutely correct. I mean, those happenings, and, you know, it was at Black Mountain College that much of that developed. They say that sort of it was John Cage who did the first happening, and Alan Capro, who sort of then later became known for happenings, and sort of terming it that, you know, talks about Cage's influence, was also involved in his courses at the New School. So the reason that I am here now and in Fort Myers and working at the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery really is largely because I came here 2 years ago in 2012, and I traveled an exhibition I had done at the Tampa Museum of Art, which was dedicated to John Cage, to the Rauschenberg Gallery. So, and included Bob in that exhibition, and, you know, the response was remarkable, and kind of the turnout, and it gave me an opportunity to really learn more about the history there, and from my predecessor, you know, Ron Bishop, who was then preparing for retirement. So it was just such a unique opportunity, and yeah.
Well, and going back to what Roland was saying about, you know, the happenings, and you know, I guess the idea that there's something temporal about it. You know, it's an event or a performance, and then it's not. Yeah. And I remember we were speaking the other day about, you know, museum folks really worrying about deterioration of works, and yet that was something that Rauschenberg himself embraced.
Yeah. Well, he talked about working, you know, in the gap between art and life, and you know, there's so much about the work that really he always, I think, thought about works of art as well as having a life, and that, you know, entropy was part of that. And so things like happenings, and there is another level at which, you know, his work was often highly conceptual. You know, he sent a telegram that said, "This is a portrait of Iris Clare." If I say
it is, yes. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. Well, and photography too. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, he sort of started out as a photographer before, you know, before beginning to paint, and then, you know, kind of the combines evolved out of that as well. But, you know, he had kind of super ambitious ideas about photography. Like, you know, one of the early projects that in some ways I think probably frustrated him and resulted in his, you know, no longer making that the central focus, was a project where he wanted to document the United States, but every square foot photographically. So in some ways, things like the 100-foot...
Like
Google Earth has done, yeah. I mean, and it's interesting even with the Chinese Summer Hall, the 100-foot photograph now, because, you know, that would have been a much easier thing now that we have, you know, Epson printers and other, you know, that from a continuous roll, one could do that. But this in 1982 and 1983... was really unheard of. I mean, it's a remarkable thing that he accomplished using those techniques and means.
We're speaking with Jay Dillinger with the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery about the upcoming solo exhibition of the late artist's work and his ongoing influence on art in China and around the world. Join the conversation with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And I wanted to come back to that story about the telegram that he had sent and maybe give a little more background on that because I think it's a rather amusing story. But a gallery owner, and he was invited, among other artists, to submit a portrait of the gallery owner for this exhibition, and that was his submission, this telegram saying, "This is a portrait if I say it is." And what I found interesting about that was, you know, Rauschenberg's work, some of it anyway, definitely has that quality of being abstract. And to that, you know, sort of brings out the idea of the viewer really playing an active role in creating meaning through their own interpretation. But here you have this other side where he's very much asserting himself as the artist, and this is the meaning, and this is the interpretation. Is there, do you think there's like a gradual shifting in his work, maybe from his early years from the combines into work that has, I guess, less of a connection to Dadaism?
I think those sorts of ideas were probably always there. You know, you think about those other seminal early works like erasing the Willem de Kooning drawing, you know, for example, which you know, was sort of taking on the giant of art at that moment, the most, you know, sort of significant, important artist at that time, you know. And he sort of talked about, you know, that being something that he just felt needed to be done, but you know, I think with his work, there's always that balance. There are things that have that kind of ephemeral nature. There are things that are much more highly conceptual. I mean, you know, it was about kind of pointing a lens often. You know, with photography, the thing about the 100-foot photograph is that, you know, it sort of takes us on this journey. He would often, I think about those things as, you know, the way that we move through the space, or, you know, it would be about reading it from left to right or right to left, or, you know, I mean, I think, you know, he was always trying to engage those around him in a meaningful way. So,
and I wanted to touch a little more on Rauschenberg's continued influence in China as well. You had also mentioned to me about a colleague at Eckerd College, an art professor who actually came to the U.S. from China because of seeing Rauschenberg's work at the National Gallery in Beijing.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, there's an artist named Kirk Ki Wang who teaches at Eckerd, who's a painter, and who had won a very important award in China, sort of third place, sort of best artist as a student. And it allowed him a good amount of money to be able to come and get his, you know, further his education in the United States. And he ended up coming to Florida as a result of having met Bob and knowing that Bob resided on the Gulf Coast in Florida, and ended up later having some exchanges with him here and, in fact, at the Rauschenberg Gallery. But I enlisted Kirk to help us with doing the signage and the announcement card and doing a kind of bilingual translation into Chinese of the title and that sort of thing. So his impact, I mean, it's really hard to kind of calculate, but I've had exchanges with, you know, some of the most significant and contemporary artists in China of a certain generation, Ai Weiwei. You know, I've been in contact with about the potential for maybe doing something at the Rauschenberg Gallery, and you know, Weiwei is kind of interesting in the sense that he didn't have firsthand experience of that exhibition. He was not in Beijing when the show opened, but he had gone to New York to try to find out for himself about artists like Rauschenberg and Jasper Johns and others, and got to know, you know, Allen Ginsberg. And he spent 10 years in New York, so he sort of left in advance of that and came back and sort of saw the impact that it had had. So in reaching out to him, he was very interested in the idea of working in this place that on some level, really was Bob's home, and I think as Lee County had been. And the Rauschenberg Gallery, you know, was a place that I think functioned as kind of a laboratory for him for so many years. It was a place where, you know, particularly early on when he didn't have the sort of studio space to be able to see something in its entirety. And as those things were so large scale, ambitious, and, you know, traveling on to New York or other places, he'd like to see them kind of in a proper gallery space or to photograph them and, frankly, to share them with this community. I mean, that's why we're the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery, not the Robert Rauschenberg Gallery. You know, everyone
keeping here, it informal. Yeah.
Everyone here knew him as Bob.
Yeah.
And so he insisted on it, you know, as much as we've actually been, you know, criticized at times for being informal about the name. You know, it was really Bob's decision and frankly, the way that Bob talked about it. And it's something we've launched all of this with a talk by Dave Hickey a couple of weeks ago, the cultural critic. And Dave brought up that fact that Bob, coming out of the Army, or the Navy rather, was just so tired of being called Milty or Ernie because his name was Milton Ernest. Mm-hmm. And that he sat down and sort of went through a list of names that he thought he might be, you know, and Rauschenberg talked that, you know, sort of said that, well, Tom was really close on the list, but he named himself Bob. And then basically, out of respect, others started calling him Robert, thinking that that was just the abbreviated form. So all of that, in that sense, it, you know, was a matter of his choice, right?
Yeah. And tell us about your own early connection to Rauschenberg when you were a young student.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up north of Tampa, actually, and I had a great-grandfather who was in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I would help him to answer his fan mail. And it became apparent to me that, one, there were a lot of creative letters that people would write to people that they admired. As a high school student, I read an article about Rauschenberg. It was sort of a feature, a local feature. But they had interviewed him actually at the Mucky Duck out on Captiva Island. And they said that, you know, when he was in town, he would always walk down from his beach house and watch the sunset and sort of have a drink watching the sunset. So not knowing at the time that I could have easily just written RR Captiva and it would have made its way to his door, I sent a letter care of the Mucky Duck in the mid-80s, you know, again, when I was probably 16. And in it, I put $20 and I said, you know, P.S., let me buy you a drink. And so literally within a week, a tube arrived at my door, my parents' door, and it had a little handwritten note from Bob that I still have. And it said, you know, I'll have that drink and wish you luck just before I go to work tonight. I've put a gift in your pocket, best RR. And inside was a signed poster to me, lithographic poster, from his show in China, in Beijing. So this is very kind of full circle for me.
Yes, it sounds like. And as we mentioned earlier, this is going to be running through January 24th. What else is in store for the future at the gallery?
Well, we're going to really try to do something very Rauschenberg specific annually. I mean, I think we'll try to do something that will probably open on his birthday every year. So we have some things really lined up. Have begun doing grant writing and other things to try to raise funds for those future shows. But it's a little premature to announce much more. There are a few things that are just kind of being finalized. So, but Rauschenberg will be very connected to how we move forward with everything. If not in terms of the work specifically, certainly sort of philosophically, in the same way we did with, you know, Yoko Ono, I mean, I think, or John Cage. So there's even discussion about some Cage-related projects, Merce Cunningham-related projects, et cetera. And they, too, had relationships to the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery, you know, during their lifetimes and or Merce came, certainly, and there was a big John Cage exhibition in the early 90s there.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at next week's opening, I understand a friend of Rauschenberg and a multi-Emmy award-winning musician here, Cat Apple, is going to be performing. Is that correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cat and Sonic Combine, which, you know, includes others that were connected, Lori Getford and Lawrence Wojtek, who, you know, also worked with Bob and for Bob for many, many years. And their band, Sonic Combine, actually, you know, they Bob kind of was a participant in it at various times. They did recordings of him, you know, making noises on various metal objects, resonant metal objects, and also, you know, a bit on keyboards and that sort of thing in some of the recordings. And he even designed, I think, for Cat, you know, CD album cover kind of thing too. So, and we're also going to fly in Dickie Landry, which I'm really excited about. So Dickie lives in Lafayette, Louisiana, and he has a kind of extraordinary history too, played, you know, on Talking Heads, Speaking in Tongues.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the show, but Jade, thanks so much for being with us.
Really my pleasure. Thanks, John.
Jade Dillinger is the Director of Exhibitions and Collections at the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery at Florida Southwestern State College in Fort Myers. A solo exhibition of Rauschenberg's work titled China-America Mix opens with a reception that's open to the public the evening of October 22nd, and the exhibit runs through January 24th. We're taking a short break, but when we return, modern urban expressionist painter and Fort Myers resident Marcus Jansen has shows coming up in London, New York, and Rome, as well as a lecture here at Florida Gulf Coast University next month. He recently stopped by our studios for a talk about his work with WGCU's Amy Tardiff. That conversation's just ahead after the break. Stay with us.